Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live with quite a treat today. Our guest is Alicia Escott, and she has been a guest before. She's a wonderful writer, has a real connection, and I don't know what you call it, but she is at one with written expression and words, and she wrote a love letter, or a series of them, right, to
yes.
extinct animals, which I hope you all get to read someday. Today, I asked Alicia to come back because she told me a story that has been rolling around in my head for months, and I just so wanted to be able to share it. So I'm going to go to Alicia Escott, who is an artist and a wonderful writer, and would you please just tell this story?
Absolutely, Jenna, thank you so much for such a sweet introduction. That's such a lovely thing to hear. I don't identify as a writer, and there's so many incredible writers out there. And
well, but you're still a good one, whether or not you know.
Oh my God, that's
really good.
Wonderful to hear. Yeah, I identify as an artist, and I work in a lot of different mediums, and sometimes that's writing. So it's an honor for you to.
Well, this was a letter to an extinct dinosaur, and it was so clever and so passionate and so steamy with love that I just couldn't help remembering it forever. But also you have a way of collapsing time,
mm-hmm.
which I love. And you're a wonderful thinker, but you collapse time so that there is essentially not such a difference, and you can correct me if I've got this wrong, not such a difference between the beginning of time and now.
Such an interesting.
Well, anyway, that's what I saw.
No, I'm very interested in looking at different timescales
mm-hmm.
and trying to think in terms of different timescales.
Yeah.
And what it is to be a human mm-hmm. operating on a human timescale, and having, you know, making your coffee in the morning and, you know, having to meet somebody downtown at 11 after another meeting in the morning, or later on today I'll be submitting some grant applications.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these things that we plan for, even our longer-term plans
mm-hmm.
for retirement, our concerns about rent, all of these things that seem so important, I'm really interested in how those relate to the larger
issues
around time that
yes.
we have.
Well, time is such an artificial construct anyway, the way we use it.
Yeah.
I mean, we use it so that we're at the same place at the same time,
mm-hmm.
and we don't keep our friends waiting, or our enemies, you know.
And that's all fascinating, too. I also just think that the being in, having these day-to-day time things, and then thinking about our time in the bigger sense,
mm-hmm.
and what an epic moment in time this is. I mean, in the geologic history of the planet, we're living through one of a handful of great extinction events.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where that project, the Letters to Extinct
mm-hmm.
Species came from. Was a way to kind of collapse the lineage of evolution.
Oh, you did that.
To sort of talk for a nostalgia, for a time of togetherness,
mm-hmm.
because we are all evolved from the same
yes.
organisms on this planet. And so to think further afield in time,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, what's facing our species and other species on this planet, as well as looking back into time
yes.
and being nostalgic for that series of letters went back all the way to the Luca, the last universal common ancestor.
Yes, I sent you that article about that.
You did, yeah.
Oh.
That was excellent.
Maybe another time we could talk about that, because that's just... Let's talk about the letter. Not the letter. Let's talk about the experience you had.
Yeah.
Writing
yeah.
something. And this brings it down to the really micro moment of a relationship. On the topic of relationships, could I ask you to switch gears a little bit and talk about just a word or two about a project that you're involved with, having to do with kind of redesigning words or evolution of words? I love it. And then talk about the experience that I so really fondly remember you're mm-hmm. telling about. So can I just give this microphone to you and you do it?
Yeah. So Yeah, it's great that you're asking about that project, which is called the Bureau of Linguistical Reality, and it's a collaboration between myself and Heidi Quante. And we work with people, others, to identify the gaps in their language or their languages, mm-hmm. where they're at a loss of words to talk about what's happening to us as climate change accelerates. And as our world rapidly changes and we're experiencing things and feeling things and witnessing things that we don't really have the words to talk about directly.
Oh, okay.
And so it's actually...
I have a question. I mean, that's an interesting point because language evolves gradually as humankind evolves, but it's happening so fast now that language can't change quickly enough to capture...
Well, everything's changing so quickly now. I mean, I would say language is changing very quickly, mm-hmm. But this project seeks to really pinpoint experiences that we maybe aren't talking about because we don't have the fluid language to talk about. And
you give an example here, right?
Yeah. So what I was going to say before is, you know, because we were just talking about time and the project with the letter sent sometime after the continent split, mm-hmm. And talking about kind of collapsing time and looking at human timescales as they relate to geologic timescales. And so one of the words that we did with this project was is shadow time, and we worked with Ranu Marjaki, who is an artist also based here in San Francisco. And at one of our field study salons, she raised a really similar idea of this, like, feeling that you're living in two different temporal timescales simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So this experience, kind of very similar to what I was talking about, where you're looking at you're planning your day-to-day life, whether that's cooking dinner for your family or long-term plans, mm-hmm. like. And at the same time, you have this shadow sense of time that makes you feel like, does this even matter?
Oh.
If sea levels are rising as quickly, does it matter if I'm planning for my child's college education?
If
New York's going to be underwater then, or you're making dinner and on the news it comes up that some species that had been evolving for 42 million years has gone extinct. And so it's this, like, being present in your own time scale and
while
then
we're being obliterated.
Being aware of this shadow time scale having a direct impact on. So that's just one of the many words that we have worked with people to create, to identify their...
That's wonderful. Yes. Yeah. Because we need to give expression to... I mean, that was always true.
Mm-hmm.
That was always true.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But now there's a need for more words, you're saying.
Well...
Does that give us some kind of relief if we can put things into a word? Do we feel a little...
Yeah, I think that we can greater conceptualize and communicate them. You know, if we have words for things, then it's a way for us to identify them as real.
And do we feel a little more in control or like we have a handle on it if we have a word for it?
I think so.
Okay.
Do you think so?
It seems so.
Yeah.
It seems so.
Yeah.
And given what you're saying, it's not true, but it seems so, and that's comforting and maybe lets us continue to make dinner for our families just in case New York doesn't end up underwater. Yes, you shouldn't plan for obliteration, I don't think. Because then, if it doesn't happen, you've made no provisions for your present.
Yeah, that is not,
okay.
I mean, that is not at all what that...
No, I understand. I'm just getting carried away with the concepts of it.
What that word is talking about. And,
yes.
It's more just this, that we can be, because we are so well-informed about mm-hmm. the world, that we can exist in two temporal times.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
You know, that
yes.
we can... be planning for short and long-term goals.
Oh, that's lovely. Okay, so this doesn't have anything to do with giving up the ship.
No, not at all. Not at all. Okay. And in fact, part of this project is really seeking other words that are more hopeful and for better planning and to provide people better ways to prepare for the future that's ahead of us. One of the words that we're seeking to create a new word for that we've recognized with the help of Rachel Kaplan, we recognize we don't have a word for, is in science fiction, there's no word for a positive, sustainable, attainable future. We have Armageddon, we have apocalypse, we have end of days, we have doomsday.
Yes.
The only positive word we have is utopia, which, of course...
Means no place.
Means no place.
Right.
And so if anybody has a word to submit to us for that talks
good.
About
okay,
a
yeah.
positive, sustainable, progressive future... in which there's more togetherness. We are looking high and low for that word.
Gosh, I wonder if some of the great religious minds would have something to say about that.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to you and this experience, how can you weave that into what happened with you?
Yeah. I think that project seeks greater communication. I think the letters project that we were talking about earlier also is a way to kind of futile desire to have interspecies communication. So I think a lot of my work has to do with those topics and the sort of just life anecdote that you had asked about. Happened a few years ago, and myself and my partner were not doing well. We really sort of communication had completely broken down. We were probably both very much thinking about splitting apart. So I suggested that we just get on some neutral territory, that we not be in his apartment, that we go out and have dinner somewhere that wasn't his apartment or my apartment. And so we made plans for that. He picked, he loves Italian food. He's from New Jersey. And so he picked an Italian spot in the Mission that he had not been to, nor had I. I think we met after work. We met first in a bar. Communication was bad. I kind of touched him at one point and he recoiled, angrily.
Yes.
We just were not operating on the same wavelength. So we left the bar at the end of our drink and walked over to this restaurant. And we walk in, both carrying the same kind of anger that we can't get out or whatever it is, these blockages. And immediately there's this quiet in the restaurant. And something about the air just sort of switched. And the hostess started sort of gesturing to us. Well, unbeknownst to either of us, the restaurant we had picked out is actually a deaf restaurant. And all the wait staff are deaf. And it serves everyone, but serves the deaf community, which I believe is quite strong here in San Francisco. The name of the restaurant's Mozzeria on 16th. And we all of a sudden had to communicate.
Did you realize that right away? Before you started this communication?
We just sort of realized something was different, and then we realized we couldn't communicate with the server
the way that we were
anticipating to communicate with the server.
Yes.
Or the hostess. And so we both had to immediately find different ways of communicating our desires, and it just tripped something in us. And Stephen kind of quietly, even though they couldn't hear us, so he could have screamed. Yeah. But he quietly said, "Okay, do you know how to sign for please and thank you?" Uh-huh. And so he starts showing me how to sign.
Oh, he
for
knew
please.
That.
He did. He
oh,
did. He's a smart guy.
Yes.
So he started showing me how to sign for please and thank you and a few other things. And so I'm following his lead and learning from him in that. And then he shows us the menu, and then we realize the way that the restaurant is operating is they have something kind of like a Skype, mm-hmm. so that the kitchen is communicating vis-a-vis screens, signing to the
wait clever.
Staff and everything. And so we're noticing these things, and we're being kind of very quiet and just finding alternative ways of communicating to the servers what we want.
Mm-hmm.
And something about the breakdown in communication that we had mm-hmm. just fell away, because we weren't relying on the same systems that we constantly have. Speaking at each other.
Yes.
We had to find these alternative ways. And
what did you do?
Well, I don't remember what we did, but we, you know, just things got lighter and we started laughing. And at some point in time during the meal, there was paper you could write things to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
What you wanted to the server. And so at one point in time, I grabbed one of the little pieces of paper and I wrote on it, "I still like you." And I folded it and handed it over to him, and he read it. And 4 years later, we're engaged.
Oh, my goodness.
And this is interesting. This is an interesting tie back to what I was talking about with the language project, because, this is a way in which language had broken down and we needed alternative means of communication. So it isn't always words, but we do have to find different ways of communicating to each other.
Well, and you know, this just gets back to what I know about writing letters. I mean, that was kind of a love letter. And there's something about writing something down and forking it over that does not require the same kind of response as when you say something verbally, I think. I mean, my experience has been that. Mm-hmm. People have time to digest it. There's nothing that says you have to answer me right away. It's just a written message.
That's so true. Yeah.
There's some value in that. I mean, the whole business of writing love letters, and people can just absorb things at their own time. They're under no obligation to say something right back. Whereas if you say something out loud, people are not very good at just taking it in. Because if they don't answer, it seems rude.
Yeah. And it gives people also, I mean, how many times have we been stuck being forced to answer something and not answering it the way that we would have 5 or 10 minutes later?
Yes, exactly.
If we are given the opportunity.
So how did this...
And that's interesting, because that makes me think a lot about the first project that we were talking about earlier, the letters sent sometime after the continent split, which you and I first connected mm-hmm. on all those years ago, and how at the time that project was my way of trying to communicate with my art audience and feeling like having work up at an art opening was not doing it, because, you know, I was really wanting to talk about these difficult things to talk about. And at art openings, everybody sees their friends and they're drinking wine, and it doesn't matter how profound the work is up on the wall. And so by mailing these letters so that people could get them in the privacy of their own home and respond, which people did.
Yes, at their own time.
At their own time.
But you're saying in the privacy of their own home, you know, you've noticed, I'm sure maybe you haven't, but when you see a movie, I don't know about modern movies, because you don't see people writing letters in modern movies, mm-hmm. but in movies of another time, the 50s and the 40s, when somebody got a letter, people in the room disappeared. They left the person alone with the letter.
Mm-hmm.
Every time. There's no such thing as hanging around somebody and looking at somebody who's reading a love letter.
Mm-hmm.
Rude. People need their own private space and time to take in what it is, because reading a love letter is private. So I'm just wondering if having sent him that and his seeing that in the quiet of this restaurant where there were no other distractions is kind of like... Yeah. Having it private?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I just love this reality of yours.
Yeah.
Thank you for telling this story. I mean, I just really wanted to be able to share that. Because it so makes the point of written, the power of something written down. Does he still have that scrap of paper, do you know?
Maybe. I think I leave notes sometimes, and he does have quite a few. But he's certainly not somebody to collect or
yes.
hoard things, so he may not. But but we're still together.
That's
and
so nice.
You know, if that experience hadn't happened, that might not have been the case. Things might have really broken down that night.
Yes.
So it's just, it's amazing what a reset.
Now, what made you, I mean, I think this is lovely of you, add that to the list of things I love. What made you decide to go to dinner? I mean, this was a dinner to separate, right? This was a dinner to, or not necessarily.
I don't think it was necessarily that. I mean, I think there was the possibility of that. I think the idea was.
So you didn't go there with, this is a breakup dinner.
Not necessarily, no.
Okay.
No. I went there thinking just we should get into neutral territory. So we should
not be in
his apartment. We should not be in my apartment. We should just go into, a space that was kind of...
No, I understand that. So that was a moment in time that was on your timeline. It wasn't a rupture or anything. Okay, good to know that. Well, thank you for doing this with me. I'm so taken with your projects, and I love the way you think, and I love the things you do. And just until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye. And I want you to remember that if you think writing a love letter, you have to wait for a special occasion, writing a love letter is a special occasion. And this one just goes to show you that you just don't know what will arise from a positive expression of affection. So important. Thank you, darling. Talk to you all later. Bye.
Thanks, Janet.